Welcome to Paint Radio with your hosts, Andrew Dwyer and Kevin Hoffman.
Let's do a podcast, Paint Radio, the APC podcast. I'm Andrew. Kevin is here. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Today we're talking about company culture, what it means, why it matters, if it matters and you want to have it, how do you implement it? How do you foster it? That kind of stuff. And so it gets me thinking. I love hearing about people's most interesting jobs or first jobs, things like that. So that's the Kevin question. What was your most interesting job before it became like a full-time job? Say before you graduated college, something you were doing part-time, that type of thing. What sticks out in your mind?
Well, my first job was a dishwasher for a dining hall. Not much of a company culture, but we had our own culture in the dish room. There was one guy who was a legend who actually rode his way all the way through the industrial dishwasher. That was culture in my first job.
When you say dining hall, what do you mean?
So it was a university setting where the students ate, and I happened to live in that town. And so that was the only industry that I could be in.
See that? Yes. And that is one of the things I love about this, especially for young people to work with older people to hear firsthand how it used to be. And I know people love to make fun of people who say back in my day, but man, I want to hear what it was like back in your day. Those are always cool stories. Maybe I'm just romantic. I think I had a lot of really cool jobs. I worked at an amusement park in Cincinnati, Kings Island, which was amazing. When I was in college, I was a banquet server at the Kennedy Center. I went to school in DC. And so I was a banquet server at the Kennedy Center, which was the easiest job in the world, but it paid really well. And I got to go backstage and see all this cool stuff. But I think the best of all was in 1990, which was the summer of when I was in college. I worked for the 1990 census and I was an enumerator, which meant, you know, I joined the ranks of people who went out to people's homes who didn't return their census form. And of course, every single person said, I sent that in. And of course you had to say, well, yeah, you know, we just got a few follow-up questions. And that took me, again, I was living in Cincinnati at the time, took me all around that area. And it was fascinating because I was all of 20 and I lived in a bubble and I got to see people on their own turf and it was fascinating. Of course, that was 35 years ago. There's now rampant anti-government sentiment, and I don't think you'd want to be an enumerator these days. But it was good stuff. But of course, there's nothing better than being a painting contractor, and we have someone who loves what they do, and we like to hear about what they do, and that is John McFarland, president of McFarland Painting in Livonia, which is a suburb of Detroit, Michigan. You probably recognize John. He was part of that fabulous podcast we did about the pros and cons of W-2 versus subcontractors, that type of thing, with Brad Ellison. So, John, welcome back to Paint Radio. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me back, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
You know, it's one thing to be on once, the first time. But, man, when you get invited back, that means something, John.
I will do my best to not screw it up.
Roger that. So, again, we're talking about culture. And the reason you're on the show is because you've got some great ideas about exactly how to implement that. But as I said at the beginning, let's start by talking about why it's important and what culture is. Because, man, it feels like it wasn't that long ago, probably because it wasn't 3, 4, 5 years ago, the Great Resignation, when this concept of young people quiet quitting, the idea that young people don't just want a paycheck, that the paycheck is not its own reward. There should be more. I want to be part of a company that has a purpose. It doesn't mean you're solving world hunger, but it just means, you know, I'm accomplishing something. So, John, just take a few minutes to talk about what you think, not necessarily your own company culture, but just when contractors think about culture, what they should think about. That is it simply about, hey, my employees like being here? Is it that I meet the needs of my employees? How do you encourage contractors to think about company culture?
Yeah, it's a great topic. And I think it's one that's really underrepresented when you guys talk to different folks. We do a lot about marketing and SEO and things like that. And culture is kind of left out of that mix because it's not quite so glamorous, maybe. I think it's the single most important thing with a company or with a unit, whatever that may be. And for me, culture is kind of the unwritten standards. You know, it fills in the gaps of the how-tos. Culture is kind of what people are going to lead with first or resort to back when there's not a clear path of if then, you know, and it fills in those gaps of the unknown, good or bad. You know, that could be being honest or being deceitful. If that's a cultural norm to be deceitful and lie to a client or lie to family or somebody, then that's a cultural norm. And for me, culture is such a critical part of my life and business because it fills in those things that you don't need to script every last little piece of. If your culture is aligned in your family or in your place of business, generally people know what the correct answer is without being told to, you know, follow this manual and go down to this SOP and read subsection X, 1, 2, and it fills in that stuff. And I think culture is critical, and I think it's often underrepresented in talking about business.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think in a lot of ways you see culture kind of transmitted via osmosis from one employee to another. And so it's very important that when you bring new people in, that they're going to be able to embrace that culture. So how do you hire for culture, and what do you look for?
Good question. A lot different answer now than if you asked me 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we would hire people that we thought had great work ethic and were going to be here and wanted to work hard and grow themselves personally. We're doing some stuff now that's much more intentional to hire for culture. We actually have new hires or potential hires take an assessment to get an idea of kind of what makes them tick. We use a product that's similar to DISC, but not the same. And for us, that kind of helps us to align with, you know, are they going to fit in this role? Are they going to be underwhelmed or overwhelmed? How do they deal with conflict with a coworker, with a client, or change or unknown? You know, some people need a very scripted life and they do much better with scripted and form. And some people think on their feet and can solve anything. And so there's a spot for everybody, a project supervisor whose job is just to, you know, problem solve for a client. They need to be able to think on their feet. There's not going to be a great playbook all the times. So they're going to be forced with odd issues they haven't come up with. So that's somebody we're going to select that, you know, although they'll all fit into our culture, that individual we're going to hire based on their ability to problem solve and kind of be a little bit more dynamic in that regard. You know, hiring for that, yeah, we need a good fit. You know, Andrew, you brought up kind of the idea of what the newer generation is looking for in a workplace. We can't ignore that. I mean, I know that we're not Google and we don't have these things where we can have these fun trips and childcare and all of that stuff in the building, but you can provide people some opportunities to express themselves if it's a type of project or a cause. We've been really blessed to have some people that have an affinity for a certain type of cause. So as a business, our culture is embracing that and saying, hey, we'll fund that sporting event. We'll donate a project to a veteran. You know, we'll do something back for a pet shelter and animals. If this is important to you, it's important to us. The company culture is embracing the people that make up that culture, which is kind of, you know, the way that we look at it.
One of the great examples that I was given that someone helped me understand DISC assessment and similar such things is, say you're trying to hire a bookkeeper and you need somebody with an extreme focus on detail, that, you know, hiring someone who really places a priority on creativity, you know, maybe the bookkeeper detail role is not the best job for a highly creative person, or someone who really wants to maximize their creativity. So can you talk a bit about to what extent the your hiring process A tries to fit the right person into the right role, but also in a larger aspect, how that person might fit into the overall company culture?
Yeah. So, you know, when we place an ad, and we're honestly placing less and less ads, and we're really encouraging our team to recruit, because they know the culture, and there's things in a help wanted ad that you can't really narrate enough. You know, the ad would be 12 pages long to say these things are important and this is what we're looking for and this is how we do this. So for us, a lot of this is placed in the hands of employees. Find people that think similar in terms of accountability, have a good work ethic, have some tangible skills that we can either use as a starting point or develop off of, or bring in and plug and play. And, you know, talk to the people that you want to work with. And we've been really, really successful the last couple of years with people bringing in, you know, maybe it's a coworker they haven't talked to in 5 years. And they call them and say, hey, I really love where I'm at. This is different. It feels like home. I think you're a good fit. And that takes a lot of the load off of us trying to make sense of a half an hour interview and a resume that all kind of read the same. And it's like, you know what, if you had enough contact with this person, you can vouch for them on a personal level and you think they'd fit our system. Let's get them in the building and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell it's very important to your company and that this is kind of top of mind. How do you manage for culture? So you've hired somebody, you think they're going to be a good fit. It's very easy to kind of judge if someone's keeping up on the revenue or the leads. But do you have that as part of your formal review process? How are you keeping track of culture fit?
Yeah, well, we definitely do when we sit down with folks. I think our company culture is so ingrained that if you're not a good fit, I don't know that you get to 90 days. We've had a lot of folks that have said, I know what you're doing. I see it. I like it. It just doesn't work for me. And our culture is so ingrained and defined that it's very easy to know that quickly. It's not going to come up about 6 months later. Our pay system and performance has been talked about. We're very open with numbers and performance. So if you're not okay with that culturally, that's self-accountability. That's everywhere. Everyone knows what the job you ran last week produced per hour. If that's stressful to somebody, not going to be a good cultural fit for us. So I think some of those things kind of regulate that. We do talk about it in our team meetings, our quarterly all hands meetings. We're posting all the salesmen's numbers individually, gross sales, average ticket, closing percentage, and then ranking. And we do the same thing for all of our crews. You know, reviews per job done is a big public statistic. You know, we do total reviews, but then we break it down. If a team ran $1.5 million and a team ran $1 million, we're going to actually show what per dollar, you know, those reviews equated to. It's kind of great on a curve. And again, if you're uncomfortable with those things being public, we're not going to be a great fit for you. And we talk about that at the interview. You know, these things are different. We've had a lot of good folks come and do trial days that we thought, you know what, they have the skills. They seem very nice and pleasant. They speak well. And they're like, this is all for me. If they ask questions and lean into those things and that kind of exposure and being out there in front of the company, we know they're going to work out. And if they're asked some questions or seem overwhelmed by that, it's pretty safe to say it's not going to be a great long-term fit. And they could be a 10 out of 10 painter and human being just at the wrong company.
So what is the culture at McFarland Painting? Is it, because I'm pretty sure it's not what I'm about to say, but, you know, we've all heard about, you know, the Amazon culture that, man, we're all a bunch of Navy SEALs and we're type A and the only gear is sixth gear and we're going. And is that how you get the, is that how you meet your numbers and you get the good reviews because you never stop? Or is it, you know, those types of reviews hitting your numbers is a function of our process. We follow our process. If we play the right way, the wins will take care of themselves. Talk a bit about what the McFarland Painting culture is.
I think a lot of it is process. You know, for our managers and our leaders, we use client satisfaction and employee success to define every decision. If I decide to charge someone for a third coat when the estimator didn't quote for it and have that conversation, am I moving towards client satisfaction and employee success? Or should I provide a discount because the client won't be satisfied and still get something for the employees? And that's a real simple 1-2. Did it check those boxes or not? We can go back and coach. Maybe we should have handled it a little differently and talked about it with these words in this order. But if it checks those boxes, it's the correct decision. And we provide a lot of autonomy for our people to make those decisions. I love the idea of decentralized leadership. I empower our managers and people to make calls. Some of the most conflict that I have with them personally is that they didn't make an aggressive call. You know, we'll take an aggressive mistake if it checks the box or attempted to check the box of, you know, client satisfaction first and employee success second. It has to be in that order. The company will take a loss on something if it took care of the guys on the team and took care of the client. So for us, empowering freedom to make a choice is critically important. So, you know, folks, again, that might get bound up by too much information, analysis paralysis, those are folks that are probably going to have some undue stress working here, because we really encourage forward thought, forward thinking, and making a decision.
You brought up economies of this situation, and that sometimes you're willing to take a loss to do the right thing and satisfy the customer. How does that play out for employees? I mean, do they end up feeling more empowered? Is there any fear that they could do the wrong thing and not succeed in that way? I mean, what generally, how are the employees, you know, reacting?
Great question. I'll give you an example because I think it illustrates it. We had a guy who's been with us for a year and a half, started painting with us, right? So no background of experience. He's lower on the totem pole. He was driving a company van at a commercial job site, ran the front bumper of a truck into a forklift that was parked stationary. So no one's hurt, no big deal, but it's an $800 bumper. Didn't talk to anybody but his direct manager and said, hey, in our performance pay system, I'm good to give up my bonus to cover this bumper. He's not responsible for that legally. My bookkeeper didn't even find out about this until payroll went through, and it just said, out of the team, minus 800 in labor to pay for this bumper, because they're paid in a performance system that they're really well taken care of. And the gentleman's name is Dan. Dan said, hey, my bad. I should have been looking when driving. The team said, hey, this job's going really well. You're our guy. We're not going to let you take $800. It's not like this is a guy that's making insane money. And the team decided to eat that before we even knew what happened at the office. There was no big call and hoopla and incident, no write-up for Dan. It was self-police. You know, Dan said, I'm driving. I'm well taken care of. I like this. I don't want a problem. The team said, you're my guy. That's exactly what I mean by culture. And those type of things, not accidents and mistakes and lost revenue, but those type of things happen all the time where they self-regulate in our world. You know, same thing. If somebody's late, I'm going to use you, Kevin. You know, you're late all the time, and Andrew and I are ready to go to the job site. And our pay system, you're costing us a little bit of hourly money. So when you walk in 15 or 20 minutes late, Andrew and I don't even need to tell you you're going to hourly for a week and losing your bonus pay. You just know. You come in and you know, yeah, I'm holding up the whole team. I'm not holding the end of the bargain. I'm down to hourly. And for a lot of people, it only takes one of those times of failure and letting down the team where the manager doesn't even have to come in and say, you know, gosh, Kevin, you're constantly late and I'm going to write you up and you were late on this day and this day. The team just looks at you and you're like, I got it. It's like, hey, you're still my guy. You still have a job here. We still want you, but we're not going to tolerate this behavior and have you get all the benefits of being on this team of high performers. And you know this, and you're just, yep, okay. And it self-regulates. And for me, designing the systems, to your point, Andrew, and kind of the way we operate allows me to frame this that it doesn't take that much to manage once the systems are in place. It really kind of regulates itself as long as you have people that are similarly aligned in terms of values in the culture.
I love, thank you for giving that example. That's really telling and interesting, fascinating. But just to drill down a little deeper on that. So it's not, you know, the employee who banged the bumper, in a way it was fear of retribution, but not the type of retribution like, oh my God, there's going to be hell to pay. The boss is going to kill me. But more the retribution is I value the opinions of my team so much. I'm so, and tell me if I'm fluffing this too much, romanticizing it too much, that I have such a respect for this job, this company, this team. It's not a fear that I'll lose the job. It's not a fear that I'll get yelled at. It's a, not even a fear, but an unwillingness to let the team down. One, is that the case? And then two, you know, what would be the official process of how that accident should be handled at your company?
Sure. I think it is a team first thing. You know, I think in a lot of companies, that individual would, you know, say it wasn't me, park the van a different way or the truck a different way, you know, and say, I didn't drive it. You know, there's six guys getting out of a truck. This was a commercial property, huge building, like almost a, you know, it's 500,000 square feet, I think. So there's enough people running around that it could have been anybody, realistically, you know. So the self-reporting one changes how we handle it from the get-go. So if Dan wasn't a 10 out of 10 character guy and he said, hey, I hit this forklift and, you know, there's no damage but our truck, what do we do? We would note the incident. We would replace the bumper. And in our system, the cost of that repair would go under Kyle's P&L, who was his project manager, because Kyle is responsible for his own budget. Our team units are rather large. So Kyle would do that and he would absorb that. And he's got enough money in his budget for some oopsies like that. And if it's a systemic problem, then it would affect their pay formally. We don't usually get to that point. Usually there's enough in there that if there's an accident like that, we're not going to make an insurance claim, obviously, right? This is, and I don't want to drive around. This truck was only 12 months old. We don't want to drive around with a bumper banged in either. So everybody wins. But, you know, the fact that Dan self-reported and did that, his team immediately felt like, no, you're my guy. We're not doing this, you know, too. And to me, that's like the biggest wins in the world. The projects get painted and they look good, but you're talking about a 23-year-old young man that said, I'll give up $800 at the drop of a hat like that. And then you got another five people on the team that say, you know, the hell you are. We got you. You're our guy. You're on our team. This is on us. That's culture. And the handbook doesn't say that's how I would like that to be happen. And I think that's the definition of culture. It's the undefined norms, right? That this is just how we do things when rules and policies don't dictate how we do things.
Yeah. I mean, you've obviously also engendered a sense of loyalty in your employees, and willingness to sacrifice for the group. So, I mean, earlier you mentioned kind of these tech companies and their foosball rooms and this kind of stuff and the snacks. I think for a long time, people have thought that's a little bit silly. And even they are starting to pull back on that. But, you know, I know that it really does come down to the pocketbook. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the benefits and some of the ways that you're able to build up this loyalty.
Yeah, well, I think our pay system being performance-based, and we call it lump sum, and we pay a percentage of the actual total job to labor. And that's hours of conversation that I love to have. But for the point of this, that job that that group of people were on, the average production per hour on that for the employees was $47 an hour. So they're on a job essentially printing money. If that job was, let's say, a low performer at $25 or $27 an hour, I think Dan still would have had the same response. We would have said, hey, pay us some money when you get a big check. We're not worried about this. We're not tracking it. So I think the pay system sets a lot of that. The way that we have things aligned with those team budgets allows us to say, we know there's going to be some things that go wrong. We scratch a hardwood floor and it's a couple $100 to repair that. So we build that into their budgets so that we have still our margins intact. You know, our guys all wear our uniforms, drive our vans, they're full-time employees. They have health insurance, vision, dental. They have a 401k with a match. And in our team meetings, we're coaching up these generally young people on how to save money, what retirement looks like, to put money away and things like that. And kind of that point of like a paycheck is a starting point, but it's not the be-all end-all the way that it was for some previous generations. Some of these guys and girls just really appreciate some knowledge of like, when you have this summer check, we're going to turn on a second account and your money, 10% of your income is going to go to this account, or everything over $2,000 is going to tip into this account, and just give them some financial advice and some education that it's just going to make them happier and better people. And that's invaluable, you know, to have somebody come in and train them up on that. And we do that stuff all the time for our folks. And I think that's a cultural imprint, right? We don't employ people that, you know, live paycheck to paycheck or are super rich in the summer and broke in the winter in our very cold climate, because we've coached them through how to do this. You know, we didn't leave it to happenstance.
John, I think a lot of people would be interested. You said you use a program similar to DISC, but not DISC. And, you know, before we did our podcast, just in our back and forth discussions, you mentioned that you use something called AccuMax.
Yep.
I know our listeners would, they're always open to new ideas. Can you talk a bit about AccuMax, what, how it works and why you like it?
Yeah, AccuMax is a great product. And I'm not getting paid to say this. Maybe I should. I'll broker that deal before we get too far. But it's basically a 5-minute assessment emailed over. So we have potential applicants fill this out and no one's intimidated by it. This is not, you know, reliving childhood trauma. These are very simple. Which words define you, you know? And so you go through this. And I'm amazed still at the accuracy that it is in 5 minutes. The nice thing about AccuMax, it gives you how you respond to your natural self and then how your stressed or unnatural self responds to different things. It also gives you kind of a breakdown on how someone may perform as a salesperson or a manager. It has dozens of reports of in conflict or onboarding a certain personality. You know, the three of us are very different. We could apply for a job and all get a similar job and probably all would be served with a little customized onboarding. So for me, this gives us a very tactical approach for people that are not career HR folks. You know, we're dealing with project managers and general office staff and crew leads that can take an AccuMax and say, okay, I need very defined rules and processes for John. And for Andrew, I can, you know, kind of turn him loose and let him go. And for Kevin, he's going to need something very different. And to me, it's a very low cost tool. The employees love seeing their results. I've never given anyone their results and had them say, yeah, this isn't me. I don't get it. You know, like there's no way this is accurate after 5 minutes, 6 minutes of a survey. There's just no way. And it is. And so for us, it gives us an idea of, we have a great painter that we want to train up to be a project manager and do all these great things. If the AccuMax doesn't align with him being a good manager and leader of people, we're going to start to look for maybe somewhere else that we can transition them to eventually of high value. You know, maybe that's small group training. Maybe that's on the sales side. And AccuMax has a ton of different reports for that. Where I find the disc to be a little harder to interpret for the layperson, you know, if you don't look at those all the time, I think you could misread those. I think AccuMax is very easy to understand for anybody.
You've obviously got a pretty finely tuned machine and system for culture, and I know it's been built up over many years. What would you say to a contractor who's listening to this for the first time, and they either have no culture or little culture or, worst case scenario, a bad culture? What would be the first steps that you would advise in terms of how to go about building culture?
I don't think you can, you can't cheat it, you can't fake it. And it's hard if a business owner's culture is one way to try to script this and become another person. I think that's very challenging. So I think it starts with the business owner and what they're capable of, what are their values, and then you build it off that. So, you know, if this is integrity and honesty and things like that, some of these cultural buzzwords, you know, you can build that down. But then you can't have a customer call your phone and then hit ignore. If your culture is honesty, integrity, and that's what you preach to your people, and a customer's on the phone and you run away from it. So I think you can implement culture, even if it's a 2-man operation, and kind of define what that is. For me, one of the biggest, I think, starting points that if I was to do this over again, really is to be open and honest from the get-go with the financials, the pricing, the numbers, and how you do things. I think a lot of folks leave a company that's smaller because they just don't understand how difficult that owner's job is. And if they knew a little bit more about that, they may be able to be more of a resource that, you know, than a threat. And so I think giving up things faster is something I would have done if I could coach my younger self. Because now I see a difference, and we have folks that can tell you, you know, what are we up over last year? And they'll say, you know, 9.67%. How far down were we in quarter one of 24 when we were all miserable? John, we were down 3%. And that's a new hire painter. We're not hiding from those numbers. That's my score. You know, I'm not running from my numbers either. We failed for the first 6 months of the year. We were flat. You know, it was not great for us, honestly. And they know that, you know, we have failures too as leaders and owners. And I think being a little more open and honest is the first starting point.
Last question for you, John. You referenced earlier, you know, where you are now, certainly not where you were 10 years ago, I'm sure in many ways, but on the topic of culture. So, you know, talk about your arc when it comes to company culture and how you decided or why you decided that it should play a bigger role than it did. You know, was that from networking with other contractors? You know, what was your educational path that led you to where you are now?
A lot of it was, you know, when I was younger, our culture was we work incredibly hard. No one's going to outwork us. That's what was our flag that we flew, right? But getting around professionals, not even contractors, but getting in networking groups with professionals, hiring people older than myself helped the culture. Hiring females helped the culture. They communicate better than males. I'm sorry, gentlemen. I have the data points to prove it. It just is true. And that forced me to kind of grow up a bit. You know, my business manager, Chris, is 15 years older than me and a female. There's no boys club with that environment. So I had to step out of that, you know, we just work hard mentality to be, I want to be a professional company that happens to paint. And I made that professional company that happens to paint kind of idea. I was probably close to 30. I was getting ready to have my second kid, I think. And I just said, you know what? Being the hardest worker in the room is only good for so long, and the body is going to start to deteriorate and that speed's going to go down. And then what do I have? So I had that realization before the body broke down. But for me, pivotal points are hiring super competent people that probably would have intimidated my younger self. You know, can I afford this person? It's embarrassing. I charged a bar night with my four buddies at 24 years old on the company card. And now I have to turn this into this person, you know, those little touch points of accountability. I think you can kind of build in by hiring someone that may be a little bit of a stretch and maybe you want to be a better person to be accountable to them. You know,
man, I love that. What a great sentiment to end the podcast. Certainly I'm a big believer in that, this idea that confidence and humility are not opposing traits, that they go hand in hand. You need to have the confidence and the strength to be humble, to acknowledge your blind spots, to be aware of what you don't do well. 'Cause that's how you start building your team, by adding people who strengthen you up, who build you up. I'm not great at X, Y, and Z, so that's who I'm going to hire. Again, confidence and humility. That's what I'm hearing from you, John. John McFarland, president of McFarland Painting in Detroit, Michigan. Thanks for coming on the show again, John. That was really interesting stuff.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Of course, this is what we do at APC, paintmag.com. So many stories, case studies. Kevin, God bless him, tremendous editor-in-chief. He gets into the nooks and crannies, the details of operational elements, but he also does a tremendous job of profiling real people, real contractors, people just like you, people who've dealt with the same challenges that you're facing. That's why I love Kevin. That's why I love APC. Please go to paintmag.com. You're going to find inspiration, aspirational opportunities, lots of good stuff. And as always, thanks for listening to Paint Radio. We'll see you next time.